Kim McNicholas on Innovation, spotlighting successful entrepreneurs, innovators, investors, and industry experts. Their stories and insights can help you become better informed, better educated, and a better investor. Your host is Emmy Award-winning anchor, reporter, and writer Kim McNicholas. Kim has been a journalist at Forbes magazine, a Fox News Channel contributor, vetted more than 3,000 startups, and has been a mentor for entrepreneurs around the globe. Now, Kim McNicholas on Innovation.
Welcome to the show. In 2017, cryptocurrency was in. In 2018, it's all about the blockchain. Now, not to say the crypto isn't bigger than ever. It is. But blockchain, the overall idea of a decentralized everything, a decentralized verification of transactions, basically at its core, is really the overriding technology that should be focused upon. And in fact, it is. So it's no surprise that in its fourth year, the Extreme Tech Challenge, the world's largest startup competition, is focused heavily upon the blockchain. The top 10 finalists selected out of hundreds will present live on stage at the world's largest consumer electronics show in Las Vegas on January 11th in the Venetian Ballroom, 12:30 p.m. Make sure to be there. You don't want to miss this. And it has several big trends represented, from the blockchain to sustainability to healthcare and just so much more. Every major trend is represented in this top 10. But I do have a feeling that the blockchain will be a huge focal point for the judges, with the blockchain market predicted to grow to $2.3 billion and even beyond that by 2021. Now, with me to go over all of the top 10 semifinalists who are competing for a chance to pitch Sir Richard Branson, possibly on his own private island. I think that's still yet to be determined, but Richard Branson still involved.
We are doing it on Necker. We've shifted the date. Yeah, the hurricane kind of delayed our stay there, but we are moving it to the fall, and it will be on Necker.
Oh, fantastic. And that voice you hear is Bill Tai. He is the founder and CEO of the Extreme Tech Challenge. Also by phone, we have Goche Geiser, who's coaching all of the teams on storytelling and presentation. Welcome, Goche.
Hi, Kim. Hi.
Thank you. Snowing there in New York, huh?
Yes, it's freezing out here.
So, I bet you can't wait for Las Vegas.
Yeah, exactly.
So what do you say? Let's start with the blockchain companies. We're going to go through each one of the 10 companies that will be presenting live on stage at CES on January 11th. These are the ones, you know, I hope everyone picks their favorites. I know I have mine. But we're going to start with the blockchain companies, starting with a company. Actually, I've interviewed Bill Barahite, the founder and CEO of a company called Abra. It's the world's first global digital cash payment network for your smartphone, and they have huge partnerships with companies like American Express. So first of all, should we start with Goche and get her thoughts? You've worked with Bill Goche, the CEO of Abra. What are some of the key points that you told him he has to focus on to impress the judges?
He definitely needs to make those like big partnerships announcements, and the fact that now they have Ether on their platform too, and making it really easy to invest in cryptocurrencies. And at that point, it's really hard. One of the interesting facts about like their product, which talks to how easy it is to use, is their customer base. The average age is around 40 to 50 years old.
Oh, wow.
So you can like, yeah, exactly. And I think that says a lot about like how easy it is to use their platform. And I think it's a very critical app that is going to take cryptocurrency investments to the next level and make it accessible to everyone.
Can either one of you explain exactly how Abra works?
Yeah, so Abra is a multi-currency interface with your smartphone. So they've really lowered the friction for everyday people that have a phone to be able to buy and sell cryptocurrencies, as well as work in regular real-world currencies using cryptocurrencies as the backhaul.
So no matter what money you put in, you can actually take it out in whatever. It automatically figures out the transition. And
yes.
Okay. Oh, that's great.
So think of it as, you know, everybody knows what an ATM is.
Right.
They're basically turning human beings that hold smartphones into ATMs.
Oh, interesting.
Meaning that, you know, so let's say I were a worker in the United States, but I had relatives in the Philippines, and I earned a bunch of cash, U.S. dollars, and I wanted to send it. previously, you'd have to send it through Western Union,
right,
and they would take 25, maybe 30% of it, including fees. In this case, you can turn on your Abra app, and you'll see a bunch of people using Abra that are willing to take the dollars and then convert them real-time using their phone into Bitcoin and send it using Bitcoin to the relative to up to the Philippines, and then someone else in the Philippines there would be acting like a human ATM to transfer it into Philippine pesos or any other currency.
So do you think that the issue, because one of the things with Western Union, there was a huge issue with fraud. I was even taken advantage of through Western Union, a Western Union transaction. Will this reduce the potential for fraudulent activity?
Yeah, well, because it is a human-to-human transaction, and you see the people are rated. There's a reputation engine, just like, you know, when you transact on eBay, you see the counterparty. And also the blockchain is such that every transaction in Bitcoin or the other cryptocurrencies is recorded in the ones that are visible, like Bitcoin and Ethereum. So you can see every transaction that has happened. It's recorded on the ledger that is permanent.
So both of you, what's the potential for Abra taking the title this year?
There are so many good companies, you know. I don't know how to call it. They're really good. But there's also a bunch of other really good companies.
Right. You have Power Ledger, and that's a decentralized energy trading platform which allows people to sell surplus renewable energy that's generated at home or your business. So it almost democratizes the buying and selling of energy. You don't have to get stuck selling to one buyer at one set price like PG&E. You can have multiple buyers, which really opens it up.
Yeah, this is an amazingly disruptive large wave. So it reminds me actually of the decentralization of the phone system, mm-hmm, that led to the creation of the internet. You know, it used to be that there was one monopoly provider for all telecommunications,
right,
services in the United States. Now there's lots of different carriers and an explosion of growth around that. You're starting to see that in energy. Why should it be the case that nations have to put up billions and billions and billions of dollars to build a nuclear power plant or a power plant or coal-fired plants, whatever they are, when you could just have communities that put solar cells on their house, mm-hmm, and they themselves become their own provider? And the systems are all in place today. For example, in the United States here in California, PG&E at peak rates will sell me electricity at 24 to 26 cents a kilowatt hour. And then if I have solar, I can sell it back to them at a penny. But I'm paying
not
26
fair.
Cents.
Right, exactly.
Why shouldn't there be a place meeting in the middle,
yes,
where anyone can sell and then have an economic drive to create, mm-hmm, the production of electricity, green electricity, all over the world in countries that don't have big power plants? This is foundationally disruptive to all economies.
Right, and they had an initial coin offering, which I think they raised more than 1.5. How much?
They were the first Australian ICO.
Right. Oh, wow.
Internet coin offering, and they raised $37 million that ICO, mostly paid for in crypto, which has, depending on which cryptocurrency was paid in, has doubled or tripled. So they're a very, mm-hmm, well-resourced company now and have announced major partnerships with utilities in Australia, New Zealand, India, and just very recently a provider in Thailand that is government-backed, mm-hmm, that has access to 575 million watts of electricity, all green.
And coming up right here on Kim McNicholas on Innovation, we actually have one other blockchain company that we are going to be talking about, as well as, gosh, what do we have? Eight other companies, seven other companies, even beyond that. So lots of companies ahead. So stay with us right here on the show.
Now, back to Kim McNicholas on Innovation.
Welcome back to the show. We are talking to Bill Tai. He is the founder and CEO of the Extreme Tech Challenge. We have Goche Geiser. She is coaching all of the teams that are going to be presenting live on stage at the world's largest consumer electronics show in Las Vegas, CES, for a chance to pitch Sir Richard Branson on his private island this fall. She's coaching them on their storytelling and their presentation. Thanks to both for joining us. Before the break, we were talking all about the blockchain companies, and we do have one more fully blockchain oriented company, and then we have a little surprise on one which Goche was just telling me during the break, which we'll get to in a moment, which I thought was just a company representing sustainability, but turns out they have a little bit of a blockchain plan. Smart strategy. that we'll talk about as well. But first up, we have AirSwap, which is a decentralized exchange for Ethereum tokens. So let's go into that.
Yeah, so what AirSwap is about is basically bringing decentralization to commerce generally. And they're going to start with digital assets in the same way that you trade shares today on stock exchanges. So think about what the New York Stock Exchange represented as a centralized place where there was an individual person that was a market maker per every name of stock. Say like an IBM share would have to go into a pit where one guy would have to, you know, match buyers and sellers. Mm-hmm. That evolved later to the NASDAQ model, which was distributed where you had 8 or 10 broker-dealers like a Goldman Sachs or Morgan Stanley, et cetera, that could trade with each other. And then it got even more decentralized with electronic platforms like Archipelago. In the world of crypto, you have thousands of different kinds of assets now that are distributed all over the place, and they're written onto a decentralized platform. So why not have the next generation exchange where anyone can sell anything to anybody that has a digital identifier? So that's kind of what AirSwap's about. And the first thing that they're working with is trading crypto tokens, particularly Ethereum.
And Gautier, I would imagine that during their presentation, because it was my first question that said, wow, what's going to happen? I mean, with multiple cryptocurrencies, what's the potential for an AirSwap that only focuses on one to really take all? And as Bill just explained, it's not just about Ethereum. It's about creating an overall marketplace and starting with one vertical, right?
Yes, exactly. And I think that's the beauty of their bigger vision is they want to enable everyone, all of us, to bring our assets online and then be able to search and trade them. Like you would be able to search the Power Ledger tokens and exchange your electricity tokens to get concert tickets using the blockchain platform and using AirSwap's platform.
And I want to move on to sustainability, our next company, which is now, you were telling me, the company's called Chooz, but it's also on the verge of incorporating the blockchain. Chooz is the world's first monthly subscription for climate neutrality from the world's happiest country, Norway. Eighth wealthiest country, I believe, in the world because of oil, but it's got to find a different means of generating capital, and that's why startups are popping up. And they saw a 180% uptick in upstarts over the past year. And I think that the Extreme Tech Challenge really is playing a huge role in it. That's where the Extreme Tech Challenge really kicked off this year. And that's where Chooz was actually chosen as the very first winner in the competition and catapulted into the top 10.
Yeah, actually, so Gautier can talk about Chooz, but the context there is the government of Norway, which is among the richest countries in the world. They're sitting on $1 trillion of foreign reserve because they essentially own a lot of the North Sea crude. They would like to see their economy grow from, you know, kind of industrial revolution oil into kind of a tech economy. So they have organizations there, including the Oslo Business Region, which is our partner, and they are our partner for launching the Extreme Tech Challenge every year. We do that in Oslo with some tech talks, and then we head up to Hagastal, which is a the place where the snow scenes in Star Wars were filmed.
Oh, wow, beautiful.
And we do snow kiting. We do a snow kiting event and do some dog sledding and make our Extreme Tech Challenge quite extreme in the snow with a bunch of great entrepreneurs, many of whom enter the contest later.
Right. That's exciting. And Gautier, tell us a little bit more about Chooz.
So what they are actually doing right now is they're buying these pollution credits and destroying them, and they're making it expensive to pollute for the big polluters like big factories. And they're doing it in a subscription model that allows like all of us individuals to pay a monthly fee, and they offset our carbon footprint. But they also partner with companies, and they kind of integrate themselves within their price, and they offset their footprint. What they're going to do on the blockchain is create their platform and their own tokens to incentivize these big polluters as well as individuals to reduce their carbon emissions in exchange for their tokens that they can later use for green energy suppliers.
And so are you going – did you suggest to them that they need to talk about their blockchain strategy on stage at CES in front of the judges?
Yes, I actually encourage them to kind of highlight that point, because if not, they could just be like seen as, it's a subscription model. It's not really making that much of a difference. But I think the blockchain aspect of it speaks to the potential of what they could accomplish.
Yeah, their idea is a fantastic one, because they basically allow the crowdsourcing of capital to purchase carbon credits that then make it more expensive for the people that actually are polluting to pollute. And so adding the blockchain,
it's a great model.
It's a wonderful thing for this world. And the blockchain adds a level of scalability to that solution and reuse of the capital. So if there's a token, people can buy and sell in and out of it. So it makes it liquid. And so I think blockchain plus their existing idea that's already working is a powerful combination to help clean up the air in this world.
Well, so far, I have no idea. I thought going in that the one company that really stood out to me was Abra, and now I'm really confused. And to get even more confused, another company in the sustainability area is Rayton Solar, which is creating a technology that a 30-year-old, Andrew Jacob, and his team hope will bring down the cost of manufacturing solar by 60% and increase efficiency by 25%. And it's all about getting – the point is it's all about getting rid of the waste, right, during manufacturing, using particle accelerators for cutting the silicon versus using blades. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so for them – so their whole point is that waste leads to the higher cost for consumers. But then my question is with them, what stops other manufacturers from doing the same? I know particle accelerators are really expensive. They went through a lot to try and raise money to get their particle accelerator, I think from, what was it, Japan?
Yeah, so, you know, this is a totally new look at the way to create solar panels.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of, I think, their secret sauce will be trade secret, meaning that they have to refine a process, just like, you know, a company like Intel or anybody else in the semiconductor business has over time emerged as leaders in manufacturing because they've just done it a lot. First mover advantage makes a big difference in something like this where you're defining a process technology. And what they're really doing is they're basically taking a decades-old process and totally reinventing it. And I think it takes a 30-year-old to look at sort of a very cumbersome existing way of doing things with a fresh look to say, that doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to do it, I would just do it a different way. And the solar panels today are basically cut out of these big chunks of silicon, and they're very, very thin in terms of flatness. The size of the saw that's cutting these solar panels is thicker than the solar panels.
Oh, wow.
So you're basically wasting all of that raw material. What these guys do is they basically take a piece of silicon, they use an ion implanter and put the charged elements in there, and then they basically lift that off of the silicon so there's not as much waste. And if they can get this to work and if they can get it to scale, it should change the cost structure of all these solar panels and therefore make it cheaper even to generate electricity off of solar and be even greener for this world.
We'll come up right here on Kim McNicholas on Innovation. We're going to transition from blockchain and sustainability into healthcare, so stay tuned.
Now, back to Kim McNicholas on Innovation.
Welcome back to the show. We are talking about the top 10 semifinalists who are competing for a chance to pitch Sir Richard Branson on his private Necker Island in the British Virgin Highlands this fall, and they are competing at the world's largest consumer electronics show in Las Vegas, CES, on January 11th at the Venetian Ballroom at 12:30. You don't want to miss that. You really, really don't want to miss that. We are talking to the founder and CEO of the Extreme Tech Challenge, which is the world's largest startup competition. And we also have Patrick Chang, who is here with us right now. Samsung, whom you work for. Samsung Next.
Yep, Samsung Next Ventures.
Samsung is really lending its support this year to the competition. You're representing them, and you've really – you dove into all of the big, you know, semifinalists this year. You know a lot about what's happening. On the phone as well, we have Goche Geiser. She is helping all these companies, coaching them on storytelling and presentation. So – really great discussion. We've talked about blockchain companies, companies representing the sustainability trend. I want to get into healthcare. And one of your kind of niche markets right there, a company representing healthcare, NeuroTrack, you know a lot about them. This is a clinical memory assessment and tracking platform. Tell us a little bit more about that company and why you think it has a chance to pitch Richard Branson.
Yeah, what I think is really interesting about this company is, you know, a lot of us, especially, you know, near and dear to our hearts, you know, a lot of people are suffering from Alzheimer's and that kind of stuff. And now a lot of people, you know, cell phones are pretty rampant in all age groups. You know, the elderly all have cell phones and they don't actually understand how to use it. But it's also, you know, diagnosing people that have Alzheimer's, you know, leading up to it. And what's really cool about their technology is, you know, they claim that they can have a really proven test by going through a series of questions, but tracking your eye movements.
Right. I was going to say at their foundation, at their core is eye tracking.
Mm-hmm. And they have a proprietary algorithm to, you know, diagnose you, see if you might have Alzheimer's or not.
Wow.
And they currently have over 100,000 users from more than 165 countries, which like means that they have the largest database of eye tracking data in the world.
Oh, you're kidding. And so is this purely through hospitals? Is this a B2B play or are they going straight to consumers as well?
Yeah, so this is both a B2B and B2C play. To get their data, they go directly to consumers through their tests. They're also creating I haven't kept up with them lately, but I know that they are creating a short-term test, which is supposed to be really quick, less than 5 minutes or so. But I'm sure, of course, you know, depending on the data that you do collect, it'll kind of skew the accuracy, but they're trying to get as many users as possible on it.
Bill, I'm kind of hearing in my mind blockchain strategy here with them.
Well, you know, anything that has to do with data and distributing that data across a repository is a candidate for blockchain. And yes, blockchain seems to be a universal thing, so I'm sure there's an application.
Gigi, are you nudging them to to mention it?
Yeah, definitely.
Are they going to do any sort of demo on stage?
Oh, I'm not sure, but that might be a great idea, actually. We'll let them know.
Yeah, I think that would be fantastic. I'd love to see how that works. Also, we have Owlet, which was founded by four fathers. I love this story. They developed a smart sock which monitors the baby's oxygen levels and heart rate while they're sleeping, and it helps prevent SIDS. Everybody has been worried. I mean, I can't remember which country it was, but they actually, when a baby is born, they give them a box. They give the parents a box to have the baby sleep in to help prevent SIDS. And I think this is probably a better option, a more comfortable option for baby. Anyone want to take this one? Gigi.
Yeah, so basically what these four young fathers thought is that the audio and video monitors were not doing enough. Mm-hmm. They were just like telling you about external conditions. So they built this, like, it's one of a kind. It uses pulse oximetry to track heart rate and oxygen while the baby's asleep. So, like, you can get the right information at the right time. It will notify the parents if the levels fall outside of the preset zone. And they're basically thinking that this is going to be something as revolutionary as the car seats that they're going to give new parents at the hospital on their way out, one of these pairs of socks.
And in looking up this company, there were multiple articles with how parents are crediting this technology with saving their baby's life. And I would think that that would be kind of tough to beat if the judges actually have kids. And I remember when Bloom, which is a company that creates a monitor for women having contractions in their third trimester of pregnancy. I remember being on Necker Island with Richard Branson and the judges trying to decide which company was going to win. And he brought up the birth of his grandson and saying, gosh, you know what? Because of that, it's tugging at my heartstrings. I think Bloom should win. So do you think that could be the case here? You have these great disruptive technologies in blockchain, sustainability, overall healthcare, but a little bit of a tug, and here comes Owlet.
Well, you know, they do make it very personal. And I have to say that the design of their product, it's beautiful and simple. Mm-hmm. It really is. You know, when you say smart sock, if you go to the website and look at the product, it's so easy to use. It's like this very cushy, soft, Velcro-y thing. You just put it on around the baby's foot, and you know what's happening all the time. It's really, you know, the companies this year have all done a great job of lowering the friction to either getting information like NeuroTrack or applying technology like Owlet,
right,
or making something that's seemingly complicated like blockchain usable in some form. Mm-hmm. That's something beautiful about what's happening today in tech.
So what's the criteria for the judges? Because if I was sitting there and I was judging these, I literally could not pick just one. I think you have three that are going to be going on to pitch, right? Just three this year as normal. So I don't even think I could. I'd want every single one of them to go on to pitch, Richard. I wouldn't want to be the one to choose.
This is going to be hard. It's been hard every year, but this year it's going to be really hard. You know, but I do have to say one of the things that we've done, you know, when we designed this contest, we didn't want it to be just sort of, you know, a bunch of people pitch and then there's like a prize. This is a very kind of engaging kind of bringing a community of people together. Mm-hmm. And all of the top 10 will end up being able to come to Necker for the finals. And we generally are able to hold it's like a tea time or some kind of a lunch where everybody gets to meet Richard. They may not be able to pitch, but everyone gets to meet. And I think it's such a cool setting where people can talk informally about what they're working on. And that kind of crowdsourcing and community allows great companies to bubble up to the top no matter what.
And what I love about every one of these companies, and when I'm talking to companies on the air, and I always tell them just – if you have a great company and you really understand and are solving a big problem, you can tell me literally in one line, probably 10 words or less, exactly what you do and make me get it. Every one of these companies for the very first time really has that ability. And I was really impressed with that because I was looking at your website and that really impressed me. Because no matter what, they could tell Richard in 10 words or less what they do and he's going to be like, oh my God, love that company with every one of them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. And I think when we were talking about the diversity, that's the beauty, but also the challenge, because like, you cannot compare these companies to each other.
Mm-mm.
So they're all going to be judged based on their like own, like where they are currently, the market they're in, their potential and the ability to execute. And adding on to those points about the community, we also have great partners and sponsors who are offering amazing prizes and partnerships to our top 10 companies to help them scale their businesses.
So probably a lot of these companies, they may not end up with a top three designation, but they will end up with some sort of vertical prize, because it sounds as though you have a vertical prize that represents each of the biggest trends.
Yes. Yeah, so I think, you know, whether or not somebody's named a top three or a top one in the end, the way we've constructed this is we have participation from a lot of interesting people and companies that end up partnering with the companies no matter where they place. Mm-hmm. You know, so if it's a blockchain company, as a, for example, Bitfury, one of the world's largest blockchain companies, is sponsoring a blockchain category, and they're quite interested in all of the blockchain participants. We have the head of digital for Sompo Insurance out of Japan. I think they're the second largest insurance carrier in Japan, $100 billion of assets, $30 billion a year of revenue. And they are looking at all of these things like the outlets and other things that can track and monitor health because it's important to their business. And then companies like Samsung. We have the one of the co-CEOs of Samsung. They're, you know, Samsung, I've forgotten their revenue size. I think they're $30 billion a month in revenue. So, you know, quite a large company. They're looking at all of these categories and can help many of the companies.
Coming up, the final three competing on stage at CES.
Now, back to Kim McNicholas on Innovation.
Welcome back to the show. Cutting the intro short, we have a short amount of time, three companies still to talk about. We have Patrick, Bill, and we have Gigi on the phone. We're talking about the top 10 companies that are going to be competing on stage at CES, the world's largest consumer electronics show in Las Vegas, for a chance to pitch Sir Richard Branson. Before the break, we were talking about great partnerships. It's not just about winning and losing, and there aren't any losers really in the competition, because this competition is really about community and partnerships and creating opportunity. And Samsung is very active involved. And Patrick, before the break, we were talking about how these partnerships really play out. Can you fill in?
I was just going to mention, the magic that Bill kind of created with this competition and also the community is, you know, this is different from all kinds of other startup community. There's hundreds of them a year, not, you know, just in the Bay Area and across the world. But they're, you know, they're all kind of really relatively the same. You know, you kind of get a prize money and that kind of stuff. But, you know, this is more about like, the community is so vast, experienced, and diverse that there's always someone within the community that's willing to help all these startups.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's exciting. And one such startup that's hoping probably for a little bit of help, but I think they're doing pretty well on their own. It's another healthcare startup. It's Tissue Analytics, which turns your smartphone into a medical imaging device. And it's a startup that was born out of, and this gives it a lot of credibility, I think, is Johns Hopkins. And so you go to the hospital basically with a wound, right?
Right.
And typically they'll break out a ruler and measure it to monitor its healing process. Now with Tissue Analytics, the doctors just need the camera on the smartphone, correct?
Yep. And what's great about them is, you know, just any kind of smartphone being able to monitor the wound and seeing track how it's healing and just, you know, based on the camera that's there. And eventually, you know, what I kind of see the big picture is not only, you know, they have a pretty clinical and B2B focus, but, you know, what I really see the magic there is being able to embed that technology into all smartphones. You know, being able to, you know, you might not be able to have clinical recommendations or anything like that, but, you know, for your own benefit, try and track your own wounds or seeing what other kind of, you know, skin diseases or, you know, type that you might have. I don't know.
GG? Blockchain?
Yes, potentially. Well, I mean, they're actually already seeing, like, amazing growth in the past years, and they're partnering with one of, like, some of the biggest names in the healthcare industry that are enabling them to access more organizations and more people and have more images that also enables them to reduce the amount of errors and reduce the amount of time spent to analyze these wounds, letting doctors actually spend time with their patients.
That's a huge issue. They're solving a really big problem. And from what I saw, they have some great traction. So they're definitely a team to beat.
Yeah, yeah. And the data, again, they have a tremendous amounts of data, too.
That's why I mentioned the blockchain. Yeah. I think that could be really huge for them. Another company we have, which I'm really fascinated by, and it's in, you know, the transportation sector, and it's SafeMoto, which separates the good drivers from the bad drivers in Africa, in Rwanda, of all places. How did you find this company?
They heard about the contest and applied. Right? Is that right, Gigi?
Yes, that's right. And they're actually incredibly excited to be in the top 10 because they are tired of being considered as like an African-ish company. So they think like this is an amazing opportunity to be among the best startups in the world and to compete against them. And he is flying from Africa to Vegas next week only to pitch at this competition and meet the members of our community.
You're cutting out just a little bit there, but basically, you know, it's an Uber-like platform that links clients to vetted public transport motorcycle operators at no cost. I actually see this company as not really an independent, scalable company. I see this as Uber or Lyft, any one of those companies coming in saying, we're buying you. What do you think?
Well, actually, they might reinvent the whole concept of hail riding because they're in a completely different market, dealing with challenges we can't even like think about, like people not knowing how to use the map. And that's why, and they see that the Uber model is not working, they're not making money, so they have a completely different model. And they're releasing a major product soon, which is going to be evolutionary.
Oh, so there's an opportunity there for them to have kind of an awe-inspiring moment. We have about 2 minutes left, so let's get to Revel. Now, this is interesting. They're taking on GoPro. I am actually fascinated by this company. They started out as creating a camera that with stabilization technology that can, no matter where it wobbles, then it looks at the horizon and says, okay, everything's going to be cool and chill.
Yeah, so Revel has done an amazing job. So where they started was with a mount that would basically provide rotational stability. So if you think about correcting vibrations and jitter on a camera, you can solve the vertical and horizontal X and Y digitally. But if you have kind of a rotating screen, you solve that by cutting out 60% of the surface area of the video to stabilize the middle part.
Yes.
And so you're throwing away 70% of what you're capturing. And so they solve that problem by building the rotational element into the camera itself. And they solve the other problem. You know, how many of us have a GoPro that we filmed a lot of stuff on? that we never took out.
Yeah, that's true.
That's, I think, the main use case.
And we have about 30 seconds left here.
So they've basically tied the capturing with markers based on acceleration or other data in the camera, and they automatically highlight those moments so you can pull them out and assemble clips instantly off your phone and share them.
That's huge, and they have a lot of B2B partners, which is not really where GoPro started out or excelled. So that's pretty big. But the only quick question I have in 5 seconds or less is literally, I mean, a suitor being GoPro, I think GoPro would want to buy them unless they have a big marketing strategy like GoPro, become a media company. Do you see them as a separate company?
You know, who knows?
I think Samsung could buy them.
Yeah, Samsung could buy them. But, you know, GoPro is suffering a lot right now, so it's very, very tough for them.
There's an opening in the market.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, everyone, for joining us. Good luck to all the top 10. You want to go see them January 11th at the Venetian Ballroom, 12:30. See them then.
This has been Kim McNicholas on Innovation. You can connect with Kim on Facebook/Kim McNicholas or email kimmcnicholas@gmail.com. Be sure to join us again next Friday at 1 for Kim McNicholas on Innovation.